The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Tonight, we have part four of our MLB trade rumors free agents. So this is going to be free agents ranked 11th through 20th. We'll actually work our way backwards, 20 to 11. And starting to get to some of the bigger names on the list. Some of them in that group are off the list. We'll cover that briefly. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, bud. How are you?
Pretty good. Getting ready for the holidays. Short work week for me, as I'm sure it is for you and just about everyone. No tournaments for a couple weeks, so just kind of chilling. So let's actually, before we do get into the list, we had a major development in the last couple of hours. Not really Red Sox related, but perhaps maybe you can kind of get a sense on how a Jaron Duran trade might look like. And so the Texas Rangers sent Marcus Semien, second baseman, power hitting infielder, has kind of regressed, you know, as of late, but he will go to the New York Mets in exchange for Brandon Nimmo, who's a pretty solid outfielder, you know, hits, I don't know, about 260 or so, decent pop, 25 to 30 home runs a year, decent on base. So it's a one for one swap there. What were your thoughts on it?
I was surprised to see how old Semien was. He's 35. At the end, to me, it's a big nothing. I mean, they're decent players. Nimmo's 32, so he's still got a little bit left. You know, a player for a player swap's kind of odd. I assume each team's plugging a specific need and they have a young player coming up to take a spot. But to me, neither player, whether by trade or any other way, was on my radar. I wouldn't want really either player, or they don't fit on our roster. So that was my initial thought to the trade. Maybe two, you know, why now and why these two players? But other than that, it doesn't move the needle for me specifically.
I think it in part comes down to just simply addressing needs. You know, the Red Sox, for instance, we have an outfield surplus, but, you know, an infield deficiency, perhaps that's kind of what it was. It allows the Mets to get a little bit more right-handed, as John Heyman pointed out. And, you know, Marcus Semien's a pretty solid infield defender, probably one of the better, you know, all around second baseman. Usually you're getting decent pop, bad defense, or bad defense, not much offense. So hopefully he's not gonna, you know, continue to regress a ton. Semien has 3 years remaining, so at his age 35, 36, 37 seasons. Nimmo has 5 years remaining, which also will take him through his age 37 season. So both contracts end around the same age for both players. And the the Rangers are taking on a little bit more money, though, because Semien was owed $72 million. Nimmo owed just around 100. So they're taking on an extra 30 or so, but apparently the Mets are going to cover $5 million of Semien's deal. Yeah, so that's just kind of weird. When they're throwing in the $5 million that the Mets need to cover, you know, they hammered everything down to the final detail. Like, this was in a conversation that started this morning. They were probably working on this for a couple of days. So as for the Red Sox aspect of it, so Rob Bradford tweeted out that the Rangers never called the Red Sox, you know, because we've got outfielders, we've made that known, and we're willing to trade at least one of them, Duran or Abreu, and we need an infielder. So the Red Sox theoretically would have been a good dance partner. The Rangers could have offloaded $72 million of Semien's deal and then taken on a very minimal contract in Duran or Abreu's, but no phone calls ever took place. I find that interesting.
Would you have wanted that?
Well,
I'll answer my question. No. No, I don't want, no. Meyer's going to be up with the big league club. I think you need to have a more impact bat at either first and or third. And Semien's been a very good player. Don't, you know, I'm not going to bag on the guy, but we should not be, you already have an aging Trevor Story at short. We need to get impact players that, the expectation should be 2 to 3 or more years.
So I guess to simplify it, I still want a Pete Alonso guy. So Semien, I'm kind of looking him as the secondary bat.
So then now, Meyer would play third in this scenario?
Most likely. And then hopefully you still get Alonso. But having said that, even as the secondary bat, I'm not like in love with it, because you look at Semien, if you go back to 2023, not that long ago, he had, I think, probably his best season ever. Well, he's actually been third 3 times in the MVP voting, but that was one of those seasons. A 7.7 WAR in 2023, played all 162 games. Hit .276 with a .348 on base, 29 home runs, 100 RBIs. It dipped a little bit. The very next year, 2024, he had only 23 home runs, 74 RBIs, played 3 last games. So that's a noticeable dip. And then this year, it fell even further. He only hit .230 with a .305 on base. So I don't know what the deal is. I didn't do a deep dive on it, but perhaps a big part of it was the Texas Rangers just saw it as a timing thing. You know what? He might have value. Let's just do it. And that makes sense. So you're going to offload him. And the price for it was to take on a $100 million contract in Brandon Nimmo. So it's just surprising to me that the Red Sox, no one even made an attempt. And what I'm wondering is, did Breslow draw a hard line last July when teams theoretically were probably trying to get either Duran or Abreu, and teams just don't feel like dealing with Craig Breslow?
I think that if you really like a player that much and you're not going to call on the player because you don't like the GM, I mean, that's not a type of personality I would want running my team, you know. And if Breslow's gun shy and is overvaluing his assets, then, you know, if you're going to make the call, you got to feel them out. You got to negotiate. You got to see what you can do to sweeten the pot. One of the things that sweetens the pot when you're dealing with the Boston Red Sox is cash. You know, so I don't know that we need to get here on this deal, because if the goal is to go try to win a championship in the next year to 3 years, I don't know that Semien's in that plan. So if he's not in my plan, and even now that I know he was available, that's not a move I'd make.
I guess my final thought on it is I think Nimmo and Duran kind of impact a team very similarly, except for maybe on the base pass. Obviously, Duran's got some speed, but I just don't think there's going to be a massive market out there where you're getting a huge haul for Duran. I think it could very well be a one-for-one trade.
Well, I would think a guy like Duran, controllable years, he's not going to get, he kind of blossomed late, so he's not going to get one of these extensions at age 28, 29. I think you could package him into a deal to go get a number two starter. He has value. You know, if you're trying to go get a Joe Ryan and you have Campbell in the mix and some prospects and they say you got to add one of the outfielders, I'd say, you know, there would be enough added value adding him to the trade to go get a player like that. So, I mean, it's certainly possible a one-for-one where we fill a need with a surplus makes sense, but I don't think he's, you know, has the lack of value where you can't add him to a significant trade and sweeten the pot.
I guess at least for the moment, I'm of the mindset that our top pitching acquisition this winter will actually come via free agency. I think that's the route they're going to go. I don't think they want to give up another Garrett Crochet type haul. You know, even though it could feature, you know, a major league player like Duran or Abreu. So I just feel like if he's being traded for a position player, it would probably be a one-for-one deal.
You might be right.
Yeah, we'll see. But as we get to the list here, I just want to share one last thing. I literally just coming into the weekend, I was just thinking it's been quiet, not just for us, but it's been quiet for Major League Baseball. Like not a lot has happened. You go back to part one of this series that we did. So many of those relievers could be off the board right now. And I think they had been in previous seasons, and some of the mid-level starting pitchers, I think, could be off the board, and they're not either. I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez and a couple others went off the board quick during their respective free agent years. So hopefully today with this move between the Mets and the Rangers, it'll start to spark some action.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that there's two factors. One is that the market hasn't been set from a bullpen perspective, a starting pitching perspective, nor a everyday player perspective. So I think until the market's set and people know they're going to slot in below, we're not going to see much. I don't think a trade should necessarily trigger free agency. And I think the CBA issue coming at the end of the season looming large over negotiations, you know. I think, you know, Boris's plan is going to be to wait. So all of his guys are, unless they get swept off their feet, they're going to push late into the offseason. That's his approach. It typically has been, unless the players went to him and said, hey, I want to stay where I'm at and make a deal. So we'll see. It could happen soon.
Well, somebody's got to blink sometime. And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I'd like it to be the Red Sox, by the way. Go get the guy you want and overpay him.
I think it'll be a trade if it happens this week. The following week, I can't remember when. We might be two full weeks away from the winter meetings. But I think the signings will happen that week. At least one big one, I would say, for us. But we'll see. All right, let's move on to the list. So we're going to start at number 20. And again, if this is your first time listening, we've covered 50 through 41, 30 through 29, and then, or I should have said 40. Botch it.
We've covered 31 through 21 completely.
Yeah, in three different installments. Math is hard. And so we've got two left. It'll just be one more after tonight. We'll probably do next weekend to round that out. But so starting at number 20 is going to be a guy I've kind of been interested in. Jason's really made me rethinking a little bit, but that would be Eugenio Suarez. He's a third baseman. He's projected by Major League Baseball trade rumors to get a 3-year, $63 million deal. The four writers have him going to the Red Sox, Athletics, Reds, and Reds, who've been very active on the market, by the way. Apparently, they're connected right now to Kyle Schwarber. So, and the interesting thing about the Reds is Suarez played for them in seven of his first eight seasons as a major leaguer. So, and if you're wondering how old Suarez is, I think he turns 35 this year. Let's see. Well, middle of next July. Year. Yep. Yeah. 3 days after my birthday. And so anyway, thoughts on Suarez?
I mean, if the Sox are in a position where we are signing Suarez, it's because their A and B plan didn't work out, in my opinion, because I think they'd rather have either Bregman and or Alonso before they would be settling on this player. The age scares me. I understand, you know, I'm seeing some stuff that his defensive metrics are slipping, as you would expect as you approach the tail end of your career. He had a huge, he hit 49 home runs while playing for the D-backs and Mariners. So, I mean, that is obviously enticing. And I'd also rather have Schwarber. I know we're, you know, left-handed heavy, but younger players, Schwarber really can't play the field. But, you know, my prize is Alonso because you could put him at first. It's not at super athletic or great, but those are the guys I want. And I would not be interested in 3 years, $63 million. And I can guarantee you John Henry wouldn't be either. So if Suarez ends up on the Sox, I think it'd be later in the market. And it's going to be a 1 or 2 year deal with a 1 year opt out, something like that. I don't think they're going to commit to this player at this age for something like 3 or 4 years.
I agree with you on the 3 years. I'm probably out at that point. If it was knocked down to 2 years and let's say, I don't know, maybe $25 million per, I'd probably listen a little bit more on it. The red flags with him right now are the strikeouts. He had 196 last year. I mean, when you're approaching 200, you're by definition a strikeout machine. And the swing and miss rate is way up. I mean, he got caught looking several times throughout the postseason. They made a really deep run, game 7 of the ALCS. And so I'm not really in love with that. You know, if I could look into a crystal ball and see that, you know, maybe those strikeouts will come down a little bit. Maybe the swing and miss will come down a little bit. I'd almost be all in again. Fenway Park, small sample size. Season before last, he hit 3 home runs in one game. I think he would just golf balls over that monster all season long. So that's what's tantalizing there. And before I kick it back to you, I don't like him at third base. I would finally move on from Yoshida. And if we did get an Alonso type guy, then Suarez is simply my DH.
I mean, you're going to take a higher strikeout rate. With a guy that hits 50 bombs. So, you know, you live and die by it. Obviously he does. I would love to, not for today because we're going through the list, but I don't think we can just say things like we're going to get rid of Yoshida. He's not a movable contract. And to date, the Red Sox have offered zero information that they're willing to pay a large majority of the contract to move him. And that's assuming there's a team that would pay him anything to play on their big league club. I think Yoshida is probably going to still be on the team, which is a significant issue in and of itself. I also think I saw something, Terry, that he would be willing to, Suarez would be willing to play some first base. You know, I'm sure that's something he's saying now before he signs his contract. So who knows if it's real, but I'm not going to be terribly upset if this is the guy we end up with. I think, you know, again, if it's a 1-2 year max deal, even if you got to overpay him for the 1 year, you know, and, you know, he's going to hit a bunch of, like you said, he's going to hit a bunch of home runs in Fenway Park. And I just think he's a consolation prize. I don't think this should be the guy they're hoping to sign.
Well, he would be the secondary bat. Again, yeah. Number one on my list is Alonso, or, you know, an epic unforeseen Fernando Tatis type trade. You know, those would be up there. So he would definitely be the secondary bat that I want. If I'm reading the Savant chart right, he whiffs more than 96% of the league. So not good. Yeah. And getting back to Yoshida, I would expect him to just simply be straight up DFA'd if anything like that were to happen. Or the Red Sox are just going to eat it all and move him that way. But
I hope you're right. I just don't think you are.
Either way, we're taking a massive L on Yoshida. But, you know, it would improve the roster 100%. By not having him. So, yeah. All right.
Which is an interesting segue into number 19.
Number 19, Kazuma Okamoto. He is a third baseman / first baseman. He's projected to get 4 years, $64 million. And he's played in the Nippon Professional Baseball League for the Yomiuri Giants, for what that's worth. The four writers have him going to the Padres, Diamondbacks, Padres, and Cubs. And I'll just kick it off here. I'll hijack this one. No, I've never heard of him. I'm not paying a player I've never heard of $64 million. I wouldn't even pay him half that. I'm sick of these Japanese guys, like, with all the hype. Not saying this guy typically does, but if you haven't faced Major League Baseball pitching for at least a couple of seasons with a track record of success, not that 2 years is a massive sample size, I don't want you. It's a lottery ticket, and I'm not willing to take the L on it. And let another team do it, but it's just been super painful, and I'm not interested.
Yeah, after Yoshida, we were told a whole bunch of stuff about his strikeout rate, hard hit rate, barrel rate. He's not a good big league player, not at the money they paid him. Whoever scouted Yoshida, I don't trust. If he's still in the system and he's the one that scouted this player, I don't trust him again. I've never seen the guy play. And so for all those reasons, go fix first and third base with established big league guys. It can't be this. It just can't. This is something the Pirates, who are on the list, should do. Go pay someone you think is going to outperform a contract, because no one essentially knows who he is. The Red Sox are ready to win. Go get established talent and play him, because both, this is a first, third baseman. We have obvious needs there. It can't be this guy. That's all I have to say.
I would much rather have a Hae Sung Kim type guy for 2 years in the middle of our infield, because I've seen him do it, and he's been hurt the last couple of years. He should be, I think he's a full go this year, and I'd take that chance before I took the chance on Okamoto. Number 18 on the list. Well, this one's kind of already been spoken for. Trent Grisham was projected to get 4 years, $66 million. The writers had him going to the Angels, Rays, Angels, and Astros. But the Yankees took a gamble. They gave him the qualifying offer, assuming he would opt out, test free agency. He opted not to, so he will stay with the Yankees in 2026 for the $22 million a year. And I think that's a smart move on Grisham's part, because he'll have a full market next year without anything attached to him. So I think it was almost stupid for the Yankees to even offer it if they didn't want him back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to offer there. He's obviously not available. He doesn't fit one of our current needs. So,
and he's a lefty, so, you know,
yeah,
definitely not a fit. Next one also took the qualifying offer. That was Brandon Woodruff, 3 years, $66 million. The writers had him going to the Mets, and Cubs. and his ex-GM is with the Mets, so perhaps that's some of the motivator there. And he was out with an injury. I keep forgetting to check out torn rotator cuff. He came back from that halfway into the season, pitched very well, had a strikeout per nine of like, I think it was 11.9. So that all looked pretty good. But then he hurt himself going into the playoffs. So perhaps that's why, I don't know, perhaps that's why he was motivated to take the 1 year deal. You know, it's $22 million, right?
Yeah. Maybe a prove it year, drive his value and go back out into the market next year. Another guy that, you know, I think if you're going to improve the rotation, it has to be with an established guy, like a Joe Ryan, who I want very badly. So, surplus of starting pitching, I don't, you know, he wouldn't have moved the needle for me either way.
Yeah. If you were going for two starters, he could be the secondary guy, but I don't think there's really a need for that. Interestingly, he's going to be either in his age 34 or age 35 season. He's not a spring chicken, and then you could lose next year. So, you know, one less year. I don't know. I think the older players are going to be more impacted by the lockout, assuming it's for a full season, than the younger players, because, you know, younger players, I think, bounce back quicker. And, you know, when you go from nothing to a full load, I just don't think that's good for an aging veteran. Number 16 on the list, one of the higher profile closers, pitched for the Yankees this year. I think he was traded to them the year before last. I did not double check that, but he came from the Brewers. That's Devin Williams. He's projected 4 years, $68 million. He is the four writers have him going to the Giants, Blue Jays, Dodgers, and Mets. So no real consensus there from the trade rumors writers. And he's just a little too choky for me. That's what I don't like about him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he pitched for the Yankees last year, so we got to see him pitch quite a bit. Lost the starter, his closer role, I'm sorry. Obviously, Aroldis is back. I think the bullpen, there's some depth there. I think you might see one of last year's starters moved out there, if not to start the season, as there's injuries occurring. There's just so much depth right now with the Red Sox. I don't think this type of money is warranted for this player, given our other substantial needs and the limitation that ownership puts on spending. So a player like this would almost certainly result in a second or third option as far as filling first and third base. So I just don't have an interest in this player. Like you said, I think that was a pretty good term there. He's a little too choky for me as well.
Yeah, he had 18 saves on the year, but finished with a 4.79 ERA. WHIP didn't look too bad, 1.12. Had 90 strikeouts across 62 innings. So that turns out to be, wow, a 13.1 strikeout per nine. So no doubt another team's going to look at him and think they can fix him. So, you know, let it be someone else, not us. It could easily be a Jordan Hicks situation all over again. But anyway, all right. So number 15 on the list actually looks pretty interesting. That is Zach Gallen. He's essentially been the ace of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's projected to get 4 years, $80 million. He's projected by the four writers to go. One has him going back to the Diamondbacks, Angels, Giants, Giants. So all West Coast teams, three of them, or two of them technically, in the NL West. I haven't heard his name getting kicked around quite a bit. You'd think Red Sox Twitter may be interested, but what are your thoughts, Jeremy?
I think this contract feels a little low. But if you could, he's 30. You might want to manage his innings because he's thrown a ton of innings. He's thrown a ton of innings, but at 4 years, $80 million, I don't think the Sox would go to 4 years even at that money. But if you were to get him in the 3 to 4 years at $20 million per for what he could be, I think I'd be not super like not Joe Ryan excited, but I think he'd be a guy that you could put in that two spot and kind of bump Bayo down, you know, and then fill out the back of your rotation with Early and some of the guys that are getting healthy. But yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, going to, you know, call my father in excitement over this one, but I think he's an option to the Red Sox. Again, not option one, but I think he could be a viable two.
Well, he did get tuned up. I didn't realize how bad he was in 2025. I mean, a 4.83 ERA, a high workload, like you said, 192 innings. In 2023, he actually pitched 210 innings. So we'll see. The strikeout per nine has dropped, you know, a little bit. It was for a few years, it was right around 9.5. Last year, just 8.2. So not really getting the strikeouts. Looking at his Savant chart, he's really not, he's very mid, you know, by most metrics. His fastball velocity only ranks 35th in the 35th percentile. He gets hit a little bit hard. I know Chase Field is a home run friendly park, but really just not anything super elite about him at 30 years old. So you would think he'd still have a ton of really good years left. I mean, Garrett Cole, for instance, signed his deal at age 30, 31, and was a Cy Young contender for 4 or 5 straight years before finally having Tommy John. So I don't know. I guess having looked at it, I'm probably, he's not too high on my list.
Yeah. Here's a guy that I think would come into Boston if he were to pitch here. And I think Bailey would say something like, he's throwing too many innings. We're going to get a better quality out of him if we cut his innings down to like 160. You know, even in 25 with a 4.83 ERA, he still threw 192 innings. So I just think in this pitching program, that if they get the savings on the contract, they could talk themselves into saying, we're going to lower his innings, we're going to get better quality out of him. That's just the way they think.
And to complicate things a little bit, he was offered the qualifying offers. So I can't see Breslow, you know, taking that essentially. So next on the list, what number is he? Number 14, Michael King is essentially offered the same exact deal, 4 years, $80 million. At least that's what Major League Baseball Trade Rumors projects. The writers have him going to the Orioles, Tigers, Orioles, and Yankees. So they have him on this side of the Mississippi. Ironically, he did pitch for the Yankees previously, and he was kind of a swing man in the bullpen, and then they just kind of managed to unlock something. He had a solid, dominant season with the Yankees and then ended up getting put in the Juan Soto trade and was with the Padres for the last couple years. But this is a guy a lot of people have been interested in. In 2025, he had a 3.44 ERA. I think he was injured, so only 73 innings, struck out 76, so just a little bit more than one per inning, but only 30 years old. And I'd be a little bit more interested in him than Zach Gallen.
I mean, I hate talking about guys coming off injuries. It reeks to me like they save money on a guy coming off an injury. This isn't quite like Giolito, where they essentially paid. Oh no, Giolito got hurt in camp, and that's somebody else I'm thinking of. But to pay a depressed price because a guy's got an injury concern, that's so Red Sox. It's not what I want. I don't want to have question marks. I don't want to talk about how they saved value on the contract because he didn't pitch well or he was hurt last year. Go get a legitimate number two guy that's healthy, that's still in the prime of his career, and let's go win games. Let's go work towards a World Series. To me, this is the Red Sox from the preceding 4 or 5 years, just trying to find value and bargains and get out of here with this.
Yeah, fair enough. I didn't realize he had a pinched nerve in his shoulder last year, came back from it, and then he tweaked his knee a little bit.
Pitched one game and went back down. So, you know, multiple issues, shoulder, lower half, concerns there.
So. All right, moving on. Number 13 on the list, Edwin Diaz, who has been one of the best closers in baseball for a number of years now. He's projected to get 4 years, $82 million. The writers have him going to the Dodgers, Giants, Yankees, and Blue Jays. All I'll say is, before I kick it to you, we'd have the best bullpen in Major League Baseball if we took this plunge. I don't see it happening. And I think he also was offered the qualifying offer as well.
Yeah. If they're not going to spend the money on a number two and they want to go get, you know, what was the term Carabas used? Super pen. You could do that. That's not how I want to be built, though. I want to have good starting pitching. Teams that win World Series don't do it with super pens. You saw what happened to the Brewers this year. It didn't work. And they were the best team for large portions of the season. So what I want to have is Crochet, a legitimate number two. I'll say Joe Ryan's name one more time, so maybe I just speak it into existence. And then, you know, whether it's Bayo or Early or somebody that – so you have that those three guys to go win you a playoff series. That's how I want to be built. I would hope that's how the Red Sox want to be built. And with the fact that they still have to do that and fill first base and third base, I think the $20 million that they're projecting for a guy like Edwin Diaz is it's not going to fit the budget that Henry's going to want to stay within.
I agree. I can't see it happening under any circumstances, but if it did, I would absolutely love it. He was about as dominant, if not more dominant, than Chapman was in 2025, a 1.63 ERA across 66 and one third innings, struck out 98. So well more than a strikeout per inning, and 13.3 strikeout per nine. Relievers tend to go higher than starters do with that metric, but yeah, I would be interested. I just think there's less than a 2% chance of it happening. So
yeah, I mean my takes are based largely in what I know Henry is and what he's not. And so if Henry had some about face and said, I'm going to spend $215 million, then some of the money should be allocated towards a guy like this. But he has given you no indication that he's going to take and blow up what's been the budget for the last 5 years. He's not doing that. So we got to stay within what we know is going to happen, and we got to fill very clear needs. And right now, the bullpen's not one of them.
Well, I think we do need to add someone. I just don't think it will be a huge, splash like that. But you lost, like, for instance, you've lost Matz, you've lost Wilson, who were both very good. Wilson pitched the full season. So hopefully they do make a move. I just don't see the bar being set that high. And then finally, we got two more on the list, but this guy has come off of it. Josh Naylor was projected to get 5 years, $90 million. He ended up signing with the Mariners for $92.5 million. So I would say that's pretty much right on the money. Three of the four trade rumors writers did have him going to the Mariners, where he ultimately chose to stay. The fourth writer had him going to the Reds. I wouldn't have been super interested, even though he does play the position we're trying to fill. He's a lefty, not the best fit. I mean, I wouldn't have hated it, but I just think there are better options out there.
Yeah, I don't love the player. I don't know that I need to get into a bunch of detail about it. He's off the board, but the next guy on the list is the guy I want,
which is Pete Alonso, number 11. He is projected to sign a four years, $110 million deal. So that comes out to be, terrible at math, what, $27.5 million a year, if I'm correct. And the four writers have him going to the Reds, Mets, Red Sox, and Red Sox. He's number one. He's number one at the top of my list. Number one over everyone, over any starting pitcher. He's number one over Tarek Skubal on my list, even though that would be a trade. I think, as I said with Chris in the last episode, right now, if anything's going to sink us, it's our lineup. We do need to address pitching, but our lineup is where we are most vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, we need power. We need a guy or two that's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, create stress on the opposing pitching staff. And this is the guy. He's been pretty consistent. He fits the mold with the monster. He's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark 40 times. I haven't heard anything negative about him. Personality wise, that would say like he's a cancer in the clubhouse or anything other than a pro. So if it's going to take 4 years, $110 million to do it, go do it. Just go put it out there and do it. You know, the curious thing is we were here last year, you know, and the only difference I'll say is that I think the Sox truly believe that Cassis was the guy. And then he goes and he has another significant injury. And I think he's farther and farther away from giving you any indication that he is going to be the guy. So I think there's a legitimate open spot at first base where they were delusional a year ago. And so I think the market would tick up for Alonso having a major player interested in the Red Sox. My only concern, to beat a dead horse, is they don't want to overpay. So they're going to wait and see what, you know, the best deal is on the table, and maybe they'll pay a little bit more, but that's how they're going to approach this thing, which is why, you know, it's not already done.
I don't think he's going to have too big of a market. I think there'll be three or four teams in on him. I think that projection is about right on the money. He signed a wonky two-year deal last winter with the Mets with an opt-out after the first year. And I think he did get paid $27 million last year. And I think you're right. I don't think they'd given up on Casas yet. But a big reason we didn't end up with him was because apparently he was dead set on going back to the Mets. I mean, they brought in Soto. I mean, that was looking like the sexy team. If the Dodgers didn't want you, but the Mets did, that was the place to be, I think, coming into last season. And it's ironic, right after game 162, they were still in the clubhouse when the news broke that Alonso was going to opt out of his Mets deal. And I just wonder if part of that, maybe Juan Soto, I mean, we're hearing whispers that maybe he's not the best clubhouse guy. Maybe he's not the Alex Bregman type guy to the younger kids. And, you know, he's just too big time to be a player that fills that role. I'm not saying that had anything to do with it, but I'm just wondering if the Mets clubhouse isn't exactly Disneyland and Alonso finally thinks it's time for a change of scenery.
I think that's absolutely possible. I think the Sox have a good clubhouse. I think they have a good manager to run the clubhouse. I think everyone kind of saw how Bregman was. And I would be surprised if Alonso saw how Bregman assimilated and say, that's what I want. I'm in this dumpster fire franchise. that spends on just a collection of talent with no real plan, and it blows up in their face every single year. Then you add a guy like Soto, who seems disinterested at times. You know, you've heard some of the things you've said and alluded to, Terry. You know, and maybe he's a guy that wants to win. You know, and that's something I think he could envision from the Red Sox. Now, if I'm Alonso and I want to win, I'd want to know what the plan is to fill third base and get a number two starting pitcher, you know. But here's the thing that I don't think that's going to happen that I want to happen. If Breslow and crew agree with you and I, and they target him as plan A for first base, go get him, please. If I hear that we didn't get him because it didn't materialize or there was one team willing to overspend, it's going to just drive me up a wall. If this is the guy you want, go get him.
When we signed Bregman, I said there's no such thing as a bad three-year deal. And I still believe that. I don't know how the last 2 years would have turned out with him. But I don't really feel much differently on a four-year deal for a guy like Alonso, who's only 31. I think that would be fine. I think he would possibly outperform that contract, even possibly. And what would make me lose my mind is if, let's say, the Red Sox offered 110, but the team that got him offered 120. I would just lose my effing mind.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. So I think Breslow, hopefully he's learned from his mistakes. I mean, he did make some ballsy moves last winter. Most of them paid off. The Buehler one was probably the one that didn't. But I think we're going to see a little bit more of that this winter. And we'll see how it shakes out. But
the other thing you could do is you could overpay him for the first 2 years.
Yeah.
You could overpay him 2 years, $60 million with an opt-out, whatever. And at age 34, he can go try to get one more 2 or 3 year deal. If the player wants to gamble on himself, that feels like the way the Red Sox are going to try to play it. That's the way they operate. I don't see him going to 4 years on Alonso. I wish they would. And guess what? I'd be perfectly fine if he hits 40 home runs and regresses in his age 35 season, 36 season. The first 3 years are going to be worth having to pay him as he regresses. It's fine. That's how these contracts work. You want to go get a guy that can hit with this much power. Sometimes you got to give the length of the deal where you assume he's going to regress.
I don't think they'll have too many issues at 4 years, but I'm just not worried about him. There's no red flags here. There's a ton of red flags with Alex Bregman, which I went into in length in my last show. If you're going to try to give him a 5 year deal, but
they won't.
I think Alonso is the JD Martinez guy from 2018. Bring him in. He's going to serve the same role, same impact. And I think his personality is good for Boston. I think Red Sox players are really going to like him. And I'd get him and one more bat. I'm not convinced that they'll get a second one, but it wouldn't hurt, you know, especially to get more balanced from the right side of the plate. So we'll see. We'll be back in a couple of days. We'll have a Red Sox related show. Maybe something will develop. Maybe there'll be some rumors that are gaining momentum. So we'll be back to cover those on Tuesday. That will probably be it for the holiday week. I mean, if something major does happen, we'll find a way to do a 20 or 30 minute show on it. But plan on Tuesday for now. Take care.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.